Well, Jesse, a decidedly more positive tone for Jace Talk today versus last night.
This is nice.
It is nice. I always like it when we get to be a little more positive. They score 7 runs, which we will talk about. Obviously, yeah. The offense coming through after they only score 1 run the entire of the ball game yesterday. They score 7 today, but today is the day of the Gausman. Kevin Gausman throwing his first career 9-inning complete game, his first career shutout, coming in start number 273.
Wild.
He carved the Athletics all day long, flummoxed them for the better part of 2.5 to 3 hours, and the Blue Jays, Jesse, finally giving him some run support. Like I said, they win 7-0 to even this series at one game apiece.
It was kind of surprising to hear that that was Kevin Gausman's first 9-inning complete game. Like, once he got into about the 7th inning and the murmurs, we started to think about it, and they started to talk about it on the radio broadcast. You look up the numbers, and you're like, wow, the only time he's ever had a complete game was in a 5-inning rain-shortened game. It's kind of bizarre for a guy of Kevin Gausman's talent and ability. But, man, in a season that has been just like walking through a barren desert wasteland in terms of memories and moments. Today, Kevin Gausman truly gave Blue Jays fans something to hang their hats on for a little while here. That was a masterful performance from Kevin Gausman, and it hasn't been the easiest of seasons for him so far this year, but what a performance from him today, and Blue Jays fans should be excited about what they saw from their ace, if we could still call him the ace, as Blue Jays staff. And a big victory. Like, that's another big part of this, too, is that they needed the win desperately, and he delivered in a big spot for them.
That is Jesse Rubinoff. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. Give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. The people's text line is always open. Just watched us a couple members, I think, of the bullpen just dump some Gatorade on Gausman as he's talking to Arden. So we'll certainly see if we can hear a little bit of that later on. But great stuff. You mentioned the Blue Jays, the season being a tough one, certainly so far, Jesse, and not having a lot of moments out in the desert. Well, Kevin Gausman was the oasis today, the drop of water to quench
we're
your thirst.
Him, yes. Yeah, as we're watching him just doused in water and ice right now, it's perfect.
He before we continue as well, because last night was a solo edition of Jays Talk, and because it was a late night edition of Jays Talk, I also wanted to give people the chance, if they so choose, not only about Gausman or the offense, but if you want to share your thoughts on Kevin Biggio and what you saw from Spencer Horwitz today, certainly feel free to shoot us a text or give us a call on that as well, because, you know, probably not everyone had their chance to share their feelings on that given the late hour, so feel free to do that as well. But Gausman, you know, it was interesting for me to see him early in this game, because, like, you know, in the first inning, second inning, you're not really sure how long he's going to go or what the outing is. I think you generally expect from your starters, you hope you get like 6 innings out of them, maybe 7 if things are going really well. And obviously things turned out great for him today. But it was interesting to see him early on play with the velo, because we've talked about it. You and I have talked about this before, but the velo for Gausman being down early in starts. But when he needed to ratchet up the velo, he did. He was able to. And I think some of it is nerves or adrenaline, rather. And towards the end of the ballgame, when he knew the game was close, he ratcheted it up again. But early on, I thought it was interesting seeing him use the fastball in the low 90s velo, the splitter coming out of his hand at the same velo around the same miles per hour. And it just looked like a relatively young A's lineup, who I'm sure haven't seen a lot of this in their young careers, looked like they were having a tough time seeing those two pitches out of his hand differently. And I think that was a big part of why he succeeded today.
Yeah, well, Kevin Gausman got 17 swinging strikes, but he also had a few called strikes, and a few of them were third strikes called. Right. And I think part of that is exactly what you just said. He was throwing the splitter and the fastball at the same miles an hour. And when that splitter just looks like it's in the tunnel the whole time and then just dips and looks like it's breaking out of the zone, but it catches the lower part of the zone, which is what we saw him do today, that's basically impossible to hit. And I think the fact that he was able to play with the speeds was a massive part of him being able to get through this lineup, just carve his way through like he did today. I think Chris LaRue made an excellent point on the broadcast that in a few starts this season, and definitely there's probably a correlation here between his results and his sort of his throwing of the baseball, not necessarily pitching the baseball. The velocity hasn't always been where it was, but he wasn't mixing the speeds. He just wasn't getting his velocity quite up there. Like, it was a big topic of conversation at the beginning of the year. It was like Gossman, you know, he had the issues in spring, late start. His velocity wasn't the same in the first few starts. So this has been a topic that we've discussed at numerous points throughout the season.
Yeah.
But today, it did feel like it wasn't an arm issue or him ratcheting it up, you know, because he didn't have a long enough spring. It really did feel like it was on purpose, like it was a strategic decision from Gossman to help him through this lineup. And man, what an excellent job, and just a pleasure to sit here and watch it today.
Oh yeah, it was so much fun to watch and be super dominant. I admit, and I said this to you when it happened, because we're sitting here in studio together, but the broadcast on TV cut to I guess it was the bottom of the eighth inning.
Yeah,
it cut to the bullpen, which is in Oakland. It's kind of like along the sides of the Coliseum, and it cut to Nate Pearson warming up, and I thought to myself, good God, I can only imagine, even if they win this game, I can only imagine what the calls will be like. If
would have been the only conversation.
Yeah, yeah. It wouldn't have been that he was dominant. It wouldn't have been about the offense. It wouldn't have been that John Schneider didn't let Gossman finish the game. And then it kind of cut from Nate Pearson to like a shot of Gossman, kind of just his hand on his chin and his kind of arm on his leg, on his knees in the dugout. And I thought, gosh, he looks glum. But then, you know what? After the inning ended, he put his hat on, he walked back out there, and I think all felt right in the world. So yeah, it was nice to see that. Sportsnet Stats tweeted this out. So I see a text here from Alex in St. John. Side question, when was the last time a Jays pitcher had a complete game shutout? So I'm not sure exactly when, but Sportsnet Stats did tweet out that the first nine inning complete game shutout on the road today for Gossman by a Blue Jays pitcher since Mark Burley did it on June 3rd, 2015 at the Washington Nationals.
Yeah.
So I'm not actually sure if that means that's the first nine inning complete game shutout period by a Blue Jays pitcher, but that's pretty good stuff. I mean, if it is, Mark Burley, the last person to do it since 2015, that's incredible for Kevin Gossman. Of course, Bassett had the complete game last year, but I don't think it was a shutout. It was a complete game, which itself we had not seen a whole ton of, right? Ryu had the complete game.
Yeah.
That was in seven innings, I think, in the COVID shortened season. And prior to that, I think it was Marcus Stroman. So We haven't seen a lot of this from Blue Jays pitching staff, and it was pretty cool to see. There was another one as well, which I thought was pretty remarkable, honestly, Jesse. Also from Steve Fallon and the crew at Sportsnet Stats, they tweeted this out. Chris Bassett and Kevin Gossman are the first Blue Jays starting pitchers to toss eight innings on back-to-back days.
Ridiculous.
Since Drew Hutchison and J.A. Happ did this on August 6th to 7th. 2014, J-Hap. I shouldn't pronounce it, but you know, I just know what I mean.
Of course.
But Hap and Hutchinson doing it on August 6th and 7th, 2014. So Bassett and Gossman, the first guys to do it since then. That's remarkable.
It is ridiculous. And you think about, you know, the bullpen has been so needed in the last little while. Of course, we don't quite know what the starting situation is going to be tomorrow, but I would envision it's going to be another opening situation from Trevor Richards, and then they'll piggyback probably Bowden Francis again, and maybe Nate Pearson after Trevor Richards. This bullpen is now rested. Like, they've had their injury issues. They've had their issues of being overworked. The last two nights, they've thrown one pitch.
Well, I mean, and that one pitch was...
Yeah,
you know,
the one
pitch
they lost.
But...
Yeah, yeah. They lost the game because of the pitch. But from a workload perspective, they have thrown one pitch. And that is the perfect antidote for what has been ailing this Blue Jays team. Like, so much. And look... This should not become the norm. I mean, it would be great if it was the norm for the Blue Jays starting pitching, but the expectation should not once again be that the pitching will carry the day. It is and will remain the strength of this team, but the offense is going to have to contribute like they did today. But what a luxury these last 2 days have been. I know last night obviously didn't end up in a victory, but what a luxury it has been the last two nights to have your bullpen throw one pitch when tomorrow is going to be a bullpen day, for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
So it's just been a remarkable 2 days from a pitching perspective. And, you know, they'll be going for the series tomorrow.
I would think tomorrow, and I'm sure we'll hear from John Schneider. I'm sure he'll confirm shortly what the plans are via Twitter, or maybe we'll hear it a little bit later on. But I got to think, like, now that we saw Pearson warm up today, he probably was going to be used tomorrow anyways, because he's one of the few guys who can throw multiple innings if you really needed him to. So there's Pearson. Obviously, Bowden Francis is going to be in the mix there. Yariel Rodriguez has not yet been activated. He's not with the team anyways, so that's not an option. But Trevor Richards certainly is kind of in the mix because he's been so dependable.
And he was so good.
And he was really, really good, certainly. So if I'm thinking to myself, and I know this is getting a little bit ahead of what we want to talk about for this game, but just really quickly off, just because you brought it up, Richards, Francis Pearson can probably get you 6 to 7 innings, I would think. And then after, and then innings, you know, 7, 8, 9 or whatever the mix ends up being, you can just go to the regular guys depending on what the leverage is at that point, right? Yeah. If it's super high leverage, then yeah, you can go to Jimmy Garcia and Chad Green. If it's a little lower leverage, you can maybe go to, you know, Yenesis Cabrera and Tim Mazin and those guys, right? So I think that, like, you, this is a great point by you, because we have not seen the Blue Jays bullpen in action really at all outside of the one pitch from last night, which gotta say put you in a great position, certainly for tomorrow. But probably in another great position for the Brewers series coming up starting Monday, because they're also not an easy out. Like, they're going to be a very difficult team to get out. So you need the bullpen to be rested. It's good to have this because you don't have another day off until Thursday, mm-hmm. which does mean, I guess, at the end of the Brewers series, you can go a little harder. But knowing the bullpen is rested, I think, does put you in a good position for the next 4 straight games, essentially.
Yeah, just take the little bits and pieces of good information that you get from this team and good results. Like, obviously, the win is huge. The complete game for Gausman is huge. The lack of having to use the bullpen, fantastic. The offense, it's so funny that I said, show the pregame, I was like, you know, it's really hard to string together like 5-6 hits and score your runs that way. And then what do the Blue Jays go out and do? They go double, 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 walk, walk, single, score 5 in the 5th inning and look great offensively as well. So you take the victories where you can get them. And what the issue has been for this Blue Jays team is being able to harness the momentum and carry it forward. It's like, okay, you take a step forward and then it's 2 steps back. And that's been happening all season long. So you need to find a way to carry the good vibes. And, you know, I respect greatly the fact that coming off of a difficult loss last night, that they were able to get this kind of performance from on both sides of the baseball today. Like, that, I think that says a lot about the team. Yeah, the Oakland A's aren't good, but the Blue Jays needed to turn things around quickly, and they did just that today.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to the phones. Brad and Nipigon joining us again. Brad, a second straight game calling for you. What's up?
Joe, I'm in love with the Blue Jays again. You know, seeing Biggio leave, that was brutal, but today was a breath of fresh air, seeing a very rare in today's MLB complete game shutout. Like, the news yesterday was devastating, double bad news with Biggio and Manoah going. But really, man, leaving Gausman for that 9th, which I was a little surprised about, was a testament to the trust the Blue Jays have in their ace and to his status as an MLB veteran and overall consummate professional.
And Brad, before I let you go, what did you think of, I know you were disappointed by Biggio being DFA'd, but what did you think of Horwitz today?
Very impressed. I had some time to sleep on it. And if you love something, you let it go, and hopefully Biggio gets more regular playing time.
All right, well, Brad, thanks for joining us here on JSOC. I appreciate the call, man. Yeah, he called in yesterday, Jesse. I know you weren't with me yesterday, but Brad called in yesterday, and he was talking about how he was super hurt because he has a Biggio jersey, and he's like a Biggio fan, which, and you know what, I can get behind that. I mean, you have your favorite players. It's tough to see them get cut, certainly. But, I think it was certainly to his point. Gausman was phenomenal today. Horwitz, again, I mean, he took the walk. I think he did. You want to see a little bit more from Horwitz. It's one game also, right? I mean, Horwitz is probably going to be up with the team for a little bit more than just today. So I think you will see him likely play tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I wonder honestly if tomorrow is a Vladdy at third, Horwitz at first type of day, but maybe you want your most sure-handed infielders in their normal quote-unquote spots on a bullpen day. Maybe that will affect who goes where, and you wait until the Brewers series, see that put forward a little bit more. What did you think of Horwitz today?
Yeah, well, he got the rally started in the 5th inning. Like, we talked about putting him into a high leverage spot, and you know, it's the walks. You know, the one of the things that you're missing with Kevin Biggio is the patience in the eye. And Spencer Horwitz did a good job, I thought, of that today. And being put into the 2 spot in the lineup, again, I always said it pregame, but it just underscores that you need immediate contributions from guys like that. A guy who comes up is hitting .335. Like, you're going to need to see it rather quickly. And I think any time you can get a victory in a game like this, I know he, you know, didn't technically contribute much. He had a walk and he came around to score, but I do think it's a better start for him to be in a winning mindset instead of, you know, they lose, doesn't get a hit, kind of maybe perhaps down on yourself. You don't feel like in your season debut you did much to contribute. But I do think the winning vibes of today is going to help Spencer Horwitz going forward here.
So he has the walk in the first inning, And then actually Luis Menino walked three straight batters. Yeah. And I think it was Danny Jansen with the RBI sac fly to score a runner, Spencer Horwitz, who at that point was on third base in the first inning. So for the first time in 30 games, Jesse, the Blue Jays score a run in the first inning. Spencer Horwitz, I suppose, lifting the curse to assert all you needed to do was call up Spencer Horwitz and the Boston Bees record from 1937 is safe.
Still stands.
I joked yesterday that I honestly didn't really care about the first inning record, mainly because they were still scoring runs, if not in the first inning, just in the second inning, because they were the highest scoring team in the second inning. It was quite bizarre, but I admit I didn't really care that much about it because it didn't really feel like it was that consequential, honestly, but hey, I mean, I'm glad we don't talk about it anymore.
Yeah, that's the big thing. That's 100% the big thing. Like, you know, also, you know, highlight packs, you got to start in the first inning of every Blue Jays game because you need to see if they scored. And it's the most Blue Jays thing ever.
You do the highlight packs for Sportsnet Central, right? So is that like your first stop?
You absolutely had to start in the first inning for the last like five games because they were approaching history. And it's, you know, 1937, it's a long time ago. So that is something that's rather significant. And it's the most Blue Jays thing ever that they ended it without getting a hit. Three walks
true.
and a sack fly.
It's true.
They scored a run. They didn't get a hit. That's, I mean, they still have the AL record, and that will live on for at least the next 30 games or 29 games. But the Boston Bees record from 1937, still standing show.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. We'll go back to the text line in a sec, 590-590, name and location. Let's go back to the phones. Alan in Toronto. Alan, what's up?
Yesterday's clutch hit, J.D. Lede against Chad Green. Whatever happens to the term, the hitter came through in the clutch. The hitter was a timely hit yesterday. All I ever heard yesterday was the bullpen blew it. Chad Green blew it, you know. There are two sides to every story. There are two sides to that story as well. And even though he may have put it on a tee, or give him a meatball. It's a round ball and a round bat, and he still has to hit it squarely over the fence. And all I heard all day is Chad Green blew it instead of Jay Lou today. First pitch swinging, came through in the clutch, and he's a hero. You know, there are two sides to every story, and that's all I ever hear. And, you know, that's my comment. Also, all I ever hear is the bullpen blew it instead of the team rally. Yesterday, Kansas City was trailing 7-0.
That was wild.
And they wound up winning 10-9 instead of, I heard that the pitching staff blew it instead of Kansas City rallied. Mm-hmm. There are two sides to every story. And that's what you have to say. You have to give a toast to Lede and not a burp in the direction of Chad Green. You know, that's I'm just sick of hearing and not hearing the player came through in the pinch.
Alan, I'm going to give my partner here show credit because in the pregame show, he did say it was one pitch and we're not going to hold it over Chad Green's head too much because he's been good in the little bit that he's played so far this season. And you don't expect a guy like Chad Green that to happen all that often. It feels like it was more of a get me over first pitch, trying to get ahead in the count. Yeah. And Blade just launched it. And maybe that's a scouting report they had on Chad Green. Maybe that's something that they were looking for. But I don't think you can look at it and say, yeah, this is something that we're going to come to expect from Chad Green. It's just one pitch that didn't go the Blue Jays' way. And credit to Blade. I think you're absolutely right about that. He deserves a lot of credit for his approach in that at-bat and having it just take one pitch and the game is over.
Yeah, J.J. Blade. I know someone called, I think it was Sam in Hamilton, who called in yesterday to say future Blue Jay J.J. Blade, which, I mean, could very well be possible.
Sure.
But I know. Like I said this last night, but like no one's kicking Chad Green out of the circle of trust for one pitch, right?
No.
Like bullpen pitchers, and I would say all pitchers do this all the time to try and steal strikes
always,
with breaking balls.
Always,
right to start an inning or start a batter off kind of thing, but specifically to start innings when you get out there on the mound for the very first time. And I don't think Chad Green meant to leave it over the middle of the plate quite as much as he did. I think it was, you know, maybe a teensy bit of a location issue, but I do think he threw that pitch on purpose in the sense of like a breaking pitch and trying to steal strike one. But I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, he's not wrong. Alan is that he, you give him some credit. I also think, but like both things can be true, right? Like Chad Green made a pitch that got hit for a home run. It's a little bit on him, but you certainly give the batter some credit as well. But I mean, I don't think my confidence in Chad Green is not rattled because of something that happened once. And I mean, all bullpen all pitchers, period, are going to be giving up some runs here and there. So it happens sometimes.
Yeah, I also think part of it is the opponent, too. Like, there's nothing against J.J. Bleda, but I do think when you're looking at the Oakland A's, who, you know, we've talked about the Blue Jays having trouble offensively this season, the Oakland A's are not a very good offensive team either, and it's against those kinds of teams where you can be a little bit more aggressive, and that's probably what Chad Green was trying to do yesterday. To your point, I think probably missed the spot a little bit.
Yeah.
But when you're against the Oakland A's, and you saw that today with Kevin Gausman, there's a lot of strikes. Not all of them are down the middle, but there's a lot of strikes being pumped in there because this is not a team that is that dangerous that they can give you big swings time after time after time. They're not going to hurt you that way. So, yeah, you miss a spot, but it happens, even to the best of them.
Let's, before we take a quick break here, and we'll go back to the text line, back to the phones on the other side. I mentioned Gausman getting doused by the bullpen for his first career nine-inning complete game.
Yes, certainly as a thank you.
Yes, I'm sure they were very happy not to have to get warm. Here's Kevin Gausman chatting with Arden post-game.
Kevin, the first complete game shutout of your career of nine innings. How many things have to come together to have a day like this?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, there definitely has to be some luck and, you know, a little bit of...
You were saying?
A lot of luck. You know, I thought they were being pretty aggressive. And so, yeah, we had some, you know, quick innings. Had some double plays to help me kind of keep the pitch count low. And, you know, the last inning, I didn't know if Schneider was going to let me go back out there. You know, you just never know once you kind of add some insurance runs, you know. But he kind of came up to me, and I said, yeah, I'm ready to go. And, you know, just went out there and grinded the last inning. Not necessarily my best stuff. You know, left some pitches up, but they were outs. And, you know, I've pitched nine shutout innings here before and no decision. So I'm happy to kind of get G out of the way. And, yeah, super cool. So always nice when you can give the bullpen a day off.
Danny's been so critical for you all year behind the plate. He's one of the best blocking catchers in baseball. What did he do for you to help you get through today?
Yeah, I mean, he's unbelievable. The amount of splits that he blocks, you know, that I throw 50-some feet, that he doesn't let the guy advance, you know, that's one thing. Coming over here, I didn't know how the two catchers were going to be blocking my split. And they've been incredible, both of them, both Kirk and Jano. And so, you know, they call a great game. They're always back there giving everything they got. Whatever thing you need them to set up wise, they'll do it without even thinking twice. So, yeah, it's a super, super great luxury that we have.
Finally, you've made no secret that as a dad, you appreciate a good 1:07 p.m. start. The ERA noticeably lower in day games than night games. What do you like about a good afternoon outing?
Yeah, you know, I think you talk to hitters, they don't like hitting day games. It's hard for them. They don't get, you know, batting practice and all those reps. And so, you know, try to be more the aggressor on day games, even more so. And, you know, happen to work out today.
Well, there you go. So tomorrow will, you hope, bodes well then for both pitchers or for all pitchers that the Blue Jays will send. That's Kevin Gausman chatting with Sportsnet's own Arden Zwelling after today's win. I do think it was funny. He talked a little bit there, Jesse, about he didn't know if John Schneider was going to let him come back out for the ninth inning. But the way he talks about it also does not make it seem like it was particularly contentious, which I guess is a good thing because I genuinely wasn't sure if he was going to come back out as well when Pearson got warm.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt because we were talking about it. The top of the ninth took a very long time.
It was long, yeah.
It took a very long time. And Gausman, for the majority of the top of the ninth, was just sitting down, you know, as he normally does in between innings. And it took so long that he actually got up and started walking around. And that got me thinking, like, uh-oh. Like, I can see a scenario here where he gets a little fidgety in the dugout and they don't put him back out there because it's been too long of a half inning. And then the explanation after the fact is just that it there was too much time in between. He got uncomfortable. He didn't want to do anything to damage his arm potentially. So there was a scenario definitely playing out that we were discussing that we could see that happening. But ultimately they ended up making the right decision because he went out there and, you know, he said he didn't have his best stuff, but he did enough. He was pretty darn good.
And he did talk about the splitter. Kevin Gausman threw 38 splitters today and he had a whiff rate of 52% on the splitter today. It was phenomenal. Yeah, phenomenal stuff on the splitter with average velo 85.4 miles an hour, max 189 miles an hour. So the splitter was working, the four seamer was working, everything was working for Kevin Gausman today. He backstops or leads the Blue Jays, backstops for the catchers. He leads the Blue Jays to a 7-0 win over the A's. Let's take a quick break, Jesse. And when we come back, we'll go back to the text line, 590-590, name and location. And we'll go back to the phones as well. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. A winning edition of Jays Talk today. Blue Jays win 7-0, the first 9-inning complete game of Kevin Gausman's career. We're back after this. Show Ali, Jesse Rubinoff with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
I thought they were really good at bats up and down. Pretty fitting that Spencer scored the run in the first there to kind of break that streak. I thought we took our walks and then we hit some balls hard, you know, between KK's homer, the doubles by Bo, Vlad, and Jano. Just really good at bats, I think, against a guy with good stuff. And, you know, when you take your walks, you got to come through with the hits. And they did that after that. So just all around, pretty complete game.
That is John Schneider speaking to the media about the offense in a 7-0 Blue Jays win. Even this series at one game apiece, the rubber match going tomorrow in Oakland. Welcome back to Jays Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Jesse Rubinoff here with you until the bottom of the hour. Still some time for you to get your calls in. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. 590-590, name and location is where you can text us. That's the people's text line, and it is always open. Lindsay in Montreal texting us to say, Jesse, it's a simple one. Lindsay just saying, this felt good for a change. I agree, Lindsay. It absolutely did. Paul in Burlington, can the Jays please decide if they are the winning team we saw today or the losers from last night? I'm afraid they will be just good enough to miss out on being legit sellers and add for 25 and 26. I mean, that is also, and we talked about this in the pregame show, and we've talked about this before generally, but that's like the danger of the third wildcard spot now, right? I mean, far fewer teams, I think, will be willing to sell big pieces instead of like tinkering on the periphery because they think they can make that third wild card spot. Because the truth is if you get into the playoffs, even if you're the third wild card playing the best remaining, because you know it is now the three, I think it's what the two wild card, the top two wild cards play each other. Mm-hmm. And then the third division winner in terms of win loss record plays the third wild card spot, and the top two division winners get the buys. Mm-hmm. Right. So knowing that even if you're a quote unquote reward as the third wild card spot is to play a division winner, I mean, the truth is, in a three-game series, the smallest of things can end up launching you forward to the next round, as we've seen many times. So I understand why teams would be a little bit less willing to sell if they think they can snatch that third wildcard spot, but it does put you in a tough position if you are not so sure about where your future lies.
Yeah, I do wonder if there's a number that the Blue Jays front office has in mind of when, you know, if they're five games back on July 15th, do they make the decision that they're going to end up trading everyone who's a free agent coming up? I really do wonder if that factors in. But yeah, that's the reality of where we are with Major League Baseball nowadays. Like, yeah, you're going to have to jump over a lot of teams, but I think you can convince your fan base if you're like three games back when the trade deadline's coming up. I think you can probably convince your fan base that you're good enough. And then you see performances like we saw today from Kevin Gausman, and you're like, all right, you get in a postseason series and you have a performance like that from Kevin Gausman. Something like what we saw Chris Bassitt do last night, what Jose Berrios and even really Yusei Kikuchi have been able to do this season and last season.
Yeah.
And yes, today's opponent isn't indicative of what you'll face off against in the postseason. But we've seen Kevin Gausman do it against really good teams as well, not just the Oakland A's of the world. So that's the part of it that's like tantalizing from a Toronto Blue Jays perspective. But yet you sit here and you're waffling and on the fence about what you think they should do, because while they show you glimpses of potential like this, they'll come out like they did last night and they get completely shut down, you know, by Hogan Harris. And it's like, okay, what are we doing here?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the issue.
I said this last night, but sometimes I see the Blue Jays struggle against elite pitchers. Like, I mean, we saw them struggle against Tyler Glasnow this year. We saw them struggle against Corbin Burns just a couple days ago.
Yeah.
And I mean, these are guys who have won Cy Youngs and who are some of the game's elite pitchers. And you think to yourself, all right, like, I mean, I know people hate herring tipping your cap, but I mean, those two guys are like, they've made lineups far better than the Blue Jays look silly
sure.
a lot of the time. So you think to yourself, okay, like, what are you going to do? Corbin Burns versus a bullpen, probably going to lose that game, right? Mm-hmm. Tyler Glasnow goes out and carves you like a Thanksgiving turkey, and it's like, okay, well, it's that's too bad, but I mean, he's done that to a lot of teams.
For sure.
But it's not really, that's not really the problem for me. It's the problem of the Hogan Harrises of the world, and like when Cole Irvin did
Tyler
it.
Tyler Alexander.
Exactly.
It's that was like, the one that got me. It was like, okay, what's going on?
What are we doing here? Yeah, and I think that's why it's your ability to believe in the Blue Jays offense is tough. Today, however, they did come through. I was afraid that Luis Medina, despite walking a ton of guys early on, they weren't going to cash in a lot of runs. I mean, the guy walked three batters in the top of the first inning, and they got one run off, and I thought, gosh, please let this not be a harbinger of what we're going to see for most of the day. And actually, it kind of was until we got to the fifth inning. But in the fifth inning, so let's see, to start the fifth inning, Kevin Kiermaier, homers. David Schneider, Spencer Horwitz, line out, fly out. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., double. Bo Bichette, RBI double. Danny Jansen, RBI double. Vogelbach walks. Dalton Varsho walks. IKF, RBI single. A wild pitch scores Daniel Vogelbach on a calm jog to home plate. It was great. I mean, that's what you want to see. You want to see them string together more mature at-bats. And again, it's one thing to do it against Luis Medina and Jack O'Loughlin, but I mean, it's good to see them do it at all. Sometimes you don't see them do that.
Yeah, I mean, you'd like to see some power. I know doubles are obviously nice, but you'd like to see some power mixed in there as well. I think fans should allow themselves, I mean, obviously you don't need my permission, but I think you should allow yourself to sort of let it play out a bit here and see if they can turn it into something and give a little bit and provide a little bit more clarity as to what the front office should do. Like, let them either play themselves out of it, which is a distinct possibility here because they're coming up against a pretty good team starting with the Milwaukee Brewers next series, or let them hang around for a bit, and then you can decide if you think this team is good enough to maybe even gasp add at the deadline and go and get someone like we were talking about off air, like a Luis Robert or something from, you know, and potentially another guy who you could add to the mix, sort of a cornerstone for your franchise. Like it's a possibility that they could play themselves into a decision like that or go the other way. But it is still, I know it's ridiculous, but it still is only June 8th. And you almost have to throw everything a little bit further down the line with this third wild card because so many teams just remain in the mix, even despite looking many times throughout the season like they don't deserve to be there.
Yeah, the season does feel like it's like balancing right on the knife's edge a little bit, right? I mean, you're looking at what's happening for the next month. I mean, they're going to go to Milwaukee after tomorrow's game, after this series wraps up. It goes Milwaukee, Cleveland, Boston, New York, Houston, Seattle. And that takes you basically right to the week after Canada Day. Usually like to the second week of August, essentially. Or pardon me, second week of July. And if that's the case, and then you got the All-Star break a couple weeks after that, then the trade deadline's at the end of July. So, you know, you have a lot of good-ish teams in front of you in the Brewers and the Guardians and the Yankees. And I mean, the Astros, a little bit less so, but the Mariners are playing a little bit better lately. So you do have to beat some good teams before I think you can get to the point where you say, okay, we are going to be buyers. Sure. Or if they lose a bunch of these games, say they are going to be sellers. I see some more text here on the text line. Nicole from Ottawa, much better today. Hand clap emoji. Love the run support for incredible pitchers. Grecian from Toronto, our pal, he says, show, they made game good for us, brother. Cheers. Grecian certainly did. Otis from Hamilton broke the streak in true Jays fashion. Pop fly, walk, 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 fly ball, pop fly, chef's kiss. Wins a win, though. I see a text here from Tito in Kitchener. Everyone is crazy today. They beat a team that's 26-40. Give your heads a shake. We stink versus the good teams. I want to be Baltimore. Lose 100 times in 2 years. Lose 100 times twice in 2 years and be awesome in 3 years. I honestly, first of all, I don't think you do, personally. I don't think people want to see a 100 loss team. I'm just going to go out in there and say it. I know people say that. I don't think you actually want that. Having said that, the way the draft has now changed and tanking has been sort of disincentivized with the draft lottery, I'm not really sure a rebuild the way that the Astros did it in the late 2010s and now the Orioles doing it a couple of years now, I'm not sure a rebuild like that is even possible anymore.
No.
Because there's a lottery for the top, like, what is it, 6 or 8 picks or top 12 picks or whatever it is. Like, there's a lottery for the top picks now, like the NHL and like the NBA, for example. It's no longer like the NFL where, like, you're the worst team, you get the best pick, for example. And, you know, they did it to disincentivize tanking because they don't want the same teams tanking over and over and over again, like the Orioles, right? But it's a bit of a bummer because it does mean, in addition to that, you can't trade draft picks in Major League Baseball. So all those things kind of, I think, prevent us from maybe ever seeing a rebuild the way these teams have done it.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good
thing. At
least
to this extent. You
know, yeah, I mean, that's miserable. I think, you know, in the league, you want to have teams be competitive. You don't want to have doormats for years and years and years. That's not a good look for anybody, and that helps, I think, drive fans away from certain ballparks. But now, I do think there's a world here where you do need some farm system, not only because you want to rely on those prospects to be future major leaguers, yeah, but you want to have leverage to be able to maybe turn other guys into trade eventually. And that's why it's like maybe Bo and Vlad is kind of what many fans, I think, would be on the fence about if they're doing a quote-unquote full-scale rebuild. But at the very least, if they fall out of it, they have to end up trading the guys that are going to be free agents that you don't think you're going to want to re-sign.
For sure.
And you have to, because then you accumulate assets and use it as leverage in future deals when you are good again, and then you actually have a farm system where you can grab prospects and you're not going and taking your only blue chippers that you have. Like, if they were going to add this season, you're basically looking at trading Aurelvis Martinez and Ricky Tiedemann. And what else do you have? They're already not a great farm system. So when we talk about trading guys and rebuilding, a lot of it doesn't necessarily have to do with, oh, go get this prospect that's going to be a blue chipper and in 5 years they're going to be a great baseball player.
Right.
It's, okay, you have that guy now and you have a number of years where you'll be able to eventually make a decision on what you want to do depending on the results of the major league level.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones. Eddie in Fort Erie. Thanks for holding, Eddie. What's up?
Not much, gentlemen. How's it going tonight?
Good. Always fun when we can talk about something we haven't talked about
good
before.
Good mood, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Two things I want to talk about, gentlemen. First of all, I want to talk about Gossman's performance today. You know, it's very ironic that he got his first complete game in Oakland, because when you think about the history of that ballpark, some of the best pitching performances have taken place in Oakland, as well as all the other stuff as well. So the fact that Gossman got his first shutout, a complete game shutout ever in Oakland, was kind of appropriate of itself. Now, I wanted to talk about the roster, because now that Biggio's gone and Manoah probably going to go on the 60-day IL, that will free up two spots in the 40-man. Where do you think the Blue Jays will add in order to complete those spots? Like, will they add like a pitcher who can be a number five guy that you can, you know, at least a little bit of length, like five innings or whatever, and then turn over to Rodriguez when he comes back, or Francis? Or do you think they'll go get another hitter off the waiver wire, like Harold Ramirez, for example? I just want to know your thoughts, and thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Eddie, appreciate the call, man, as always. You know, it's a good question when it comes to filling that 40-man spot, because a lot of the prospects we talk about are already on the 40-man, right? I think you got to remember that, because we're not talking about the 26-man active roster, which is full right now, which mm-hmm. is why Bijou got DFA'd. But on the 40-man, like, I was thinking to myself, like, I wonder some of the prospects could be on there that are not on there. But Adam Macko is, in fact, for example, on the 40-man. He is, I think, considered probably right now, the injuries to the variety of pitching prospects, probably their best pitching prospect right now, who is healthy. Eric Swanson is in the minors right now, but he is still obviously on the 40-man.
Yeah.
You got Leo Jimenez, Aurelvis Martinez, Addison Barger, Nathan Lucas, all in the 40-man as well. Like, I kind of wonder if they are just going to wait a little bit, because, I mean, I wonder if Biggio getting, because Biggio can still be traded, right? He's not on the 40-man right now, but he can still be traded. So I wonder if maybe they're waiting to work something out, because I think I believe the process for it is you have 5 days after he gets DFA'd. So I suppose it would be 4 days now, because he got DFA'd yesterday, but you have 5 days to work out a trade with another team. And then if that doesn't come to pass, you can put the guy on waivers, and then you have 2 days for that. And then after that, if he
trade
goes on,
him or
on
release him.
No, after the 2 days, if he's not traded or hasn't been claimed, then he goes unclaimed. He can elect free agency and then just sign with whoever he wants. And people might do that, because some teams might say, okay, well, Biggio is getting, he's owed $2.7 million in his contract. I don't want Biggio at 2.7, but I wouldn't mind Biggio at 700 grand or something like that. Cause the Blue Jays still got to pay him the money, cause mm-hmm. they DFA'd him. He's going to get the money one way or another. It's just, as he's going to get the money from the Blue Jays or from another team. So I kind of wonder if they're waiting to work out a trade for Bijou and are working the phones right now, even if for something who's not going to be a major piece, you can still trade him and then you fill the roster spot that way.
Yeah, you can think about trading him.
And maybe it is Harold Ramirez. Yeah, cash considerations happens all the time. Maybe it is a Harold Ramirez signing, but I think that's probably what they're waiting for because all the obvious quote-unquote prospects are already on the 40-man.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent point. And you try, if there's anything that you can recoup for a guy that you would otherwise lose for absolutely nothing, whether it's cash or a low-level prospect that you think you can maybe catch lightning in a bottle with, you have to do that. So I'm with you. I do think that that's what they're waiting for here. And anything that they can recoup in this sort of a situation would be golden for them.
Yeah, for sure. I think so.
Yeah, I think what the intention was. The intention was to try and make the team better right now and win right now. But if you can get something for a Kevin Biggio, a 29-year-old who just DFA'd, go get it.
And I mean, if it's Harold Ramirez, I mean, you know who's not in the 40-man is Joey Votto. So, I mean, Joey Votto would have to get a spot cleared. But, I mean, there was a text from Tango in Ottawa. Any updates on Votto? Last I heard, he's still not that close to getting into minor league games for the Bisons. And, I mean, I suppose if he is healthy and he gets into the base running and hitting progressions that they have in the minors, I suppose you could just kind of jump him right to the Blue Jays, I think. But if you're that old, I don't know if you'd really want... I know it makes it sound like he's a million years old, but even for someone like of Joey Votto's stature, I'm not sure if you want to take the risk. So, you know, and there was the news that he gotten sick in addition to the injuries and so on. So I don't know, like maybe that is what they're waiting for. But we talked about this in the pregame show, Jesse, but I got to think that going forward, what's going to happen is I know people are somewhat upset about the Biggio DFA, but I mean, like I said to you before, we were talking about spots, including Ernie Clement in this, you're talking about spots 24, 25 and 26 on the active roster. Mm-hmm. And if one of them, if another guy goes, I know people were upset about Vogelbach, but I mean, Vogelbach is probably the next guy. If you were looking to bring in someone, even if it is someone like on a minor league deal, or it is a Harold Ramirez or something like that, I feel like we're really talking about churning that bottom of the active roster to a certain extent.
Yeah. I think they still do value the versatility and like, frankly, losing Kevin Biggio for, at this point, nothing
right.
hurts that versatility a little bit. And keeping Daniel Vogelbach, I mean, this is a guy who at like best can play a little bit of first base, but mostly is a DH. And I don't think that they would compromise the roster by keeping him. If someone else has to go, it's likely going to be a guy that really only has one tool and, you know, has struggled to this point in the season with that tool, and that's hitting. So by all intents and purposes, if there's another shoe to drop here, it's going to be Daniel Vogelbach.
What do you think? I'm not sure if I've seen if they've confirmed who is throwing tomorrow, but what do you think? What are your expectations for the bullpen tomorrow, Jesse, before we go?
I think they're going to run it back with Richards, Francis, and Pearson, and especially coming off of this two-day stretch where the bullpen's only thrown one pitch. I really do think that they're going to go all systems go for tomorrow and use whoever they have to use to win the game. Like, I think that's the most important thing.
I agree
too.
With you.
Like, I don't think it's going to be a situation where they're going up against Corbin Burns and they kind of wave the white towel and it's like, well, what did you really expect? You got to go out and win tomorrow, so use whoever you have to use.
Schneider hasn't confirmed it, but Mike and Victoria texting, just thinking, if Baden Francis can't open against this lineup, when can you use him? Maybe that does. Maybe that's a good point. Like, maybe you do see Baden Francis open and you save Trevor Richards and Nate
for the
Pearson.
Milwaukee series.
Yeah. That's Jesse Rubinoff. I'm Sho Ali. Thanks for being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by your local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Windsor Center in Windsor North. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Jesse, for Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, Andrew Adams, I'm Sho Ali. We're out of here. Tomorrow, Julia Kreutz joins me on pre- and post-game coverage. We're back tomorrow. Have a great Saturday evening, everyone. We'll talk to you later.